time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, celebrating the vibrant voices of embroidery and textile art. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X-Stitch, and today I'm interviewing Leslie Wheeler, a poet, quilter, and textile artist from Los Angeles. In this second half of our Needle Exchange, we explore Leslie's growth as a maker. She shares how she's developed confidence with her machines, her love of embroidery and fabric collecting, and the playful side projects that keep her creativity flowing, from Busta Rhymes back patches to Beatles-inspired tarot cards. We also chat about her favourite books, films, poets and music, revealing the cultural influences that fuel her practice. For someone else who is equally inspired by icons and music, Needle Exchange 005, oh yes, all the way back then, with Jane Sanders, aka Stitching in the Kitchen, is definitely worth a listen. If you're listening to this and you're not following me, Mr. X Stitch on Instagram, A, I forgive you, we all make mistakes, and B, you can rectify that right now, I'll wait. Good job. I'll be back next week with a different conversation with somebody else in the world of Stitch, but until then, enjoy the show. How have you developed then as a craftsperson in the time that you've been doing this? Because let's be honest, relatively short time. How have you developed?
I think part of it is the big development, I'd say, is like trusting myself more. Each time I set out to start a new card, like with this one, I put the base layer on my design wall, and then I start, and I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I forget how I started. And I'm like, oh shit, if only I had written down the steps or something. But like each time I do this now, I'm like, actually, I don't need to know. And I've done it before and I can do it again. And just like remembering to have fun with it instead of making it into something that I need to have an exact formula for. But then I think also on like the technical side of things, I've just gotten a lot better with my machines and like learning. I'm looking because right now my computer's on my machine embroidery table. So learning to use that machine has been a big learning curve, and I'm not perfect at it by any means. But like learning skills like that, I've taken took a really awesome set of classes from Maggie Hensel Brown on needle lace, and just like learning as much as I can from different disciplines within textile arts and trying to bring little tricks and ideas and even just like mindsets from those different disciplines back into what I do has been really exciting. I took like a bobbin lace class, thought I was going to do that. That's difficult.
It's so time consuming. That's the thing, isn't it? And I love lace because it's quite overlooked these days. You only really think of lace as being in like a paperweight in a tourist office or something or other, you know, but where I grew up in Bedford, there's quite a strong lace tradition. And bobbin lace, yeah, you've really got to be good at like throwing a thing with your finger about a quarter of an inch. And if you can do that, isn't it? Just that all day long, isn't it? Just wiggling your fingers.
Right. Yeah. I went to this incredible like little conference at a hotel just south of LA. And I was the youngest person there by a couple decades. And it was so sweet. And they were like so stoked to have new people there. But I'm just like, it's complicated, and I have all the materials that I just moved. And so I moved so much thread and so much stuff and like the big bobbin lace pillow. And I'm like, I can't get rid of it. You never know. Maybe I'll have a moment with it.
Did you hear all about like the death bobbins and those sorts of things? So like certainly in the UK, because bobbin lace was such a thing, you know, where I grew up, I think Catherine of Aragon, when she was one of King Henry's wives, she was from Belgium and she brought a lot of lace over to the UK and really led to a sort of renaissance of it. And obviously you've got these, particularly in the UK, different areas of the country, you've got different styles of lace and all that kind of thing. That's what I really like about it. But they're like the bobbins, what do they call them? Spangles. The spangles, mm-hmm. The little doodads that you have on the end.
You get ones for special occasions, birthdays, special events and all those kind of things. But so it would also be that if there were hangings, if people were being killed for their crimes and stuff, sometimes they do like a special edition little bobbin spangle thing for that as well. So you'd have all these ones that would have like the names of people that had been like hung for their crimes and all that kind of thing. Just casually using those to make a bit of lace.
Yeah, that's a little bit of witchcraft there, yeah.
Yeah, that's some proper medieval. I could see that. I mean, do you find that there are certain media or certain textile formats that are starting to call out to you more than the average?
I've been doing a lot of embroidery, a lot of hand embroidery too. I like the idea of like quilting, especially when I'm thinking about the cards, kind of feels like embroidery in a certain way because I'm like laying down and it's lines. But yeah, I love the idea of then taking it analog and being able to do it anywhere. And so I've been working a lot. I have like too much fabric. I have a bunch of fabric I got from someone in LA who their company is called Reweave, and they rescue fabric from interior design companies, like their samples and stuff that they would normally pitch once it was out of fashion or whatever. And they make clothing with it. They had too much. And so through my local textile guild, I got connected with them and now I have it all. And so I've just been taking this kind of like, I don't know, is it jacquard? Like where it's like it's like a flowery pattern imposed on this like kind of silky material. But so I've just been tracing, like using it like a coloring book to like practice different stitches and just like using all the different colors I can to kind of like the flowers that are, I think, supposed to kind of be like background to the main pattern. I make them kind of pop out, and that's really fun. And I love thread and all the different textures. I went to Paris in the spring and I went to Auversois. There's like this silk embroidery shop. They make their own thread, and like I spent too much money and just got all the colors and all the textures. And so I like that because it's so tactile. Whereas with like the quilting, you know, I use the same kind of cotton thread usually all the time.
I'm just going to do a public information notice for a second. The phrase too much fabric has been used now for some people. They won't understand this in the same way as I don't understand the phrase too much cake. But basically, it's the word fabric and it's used next to the word too much to imply that that could be a thing. Some people will be like with me. It's like too much cake. I'm like, I don't understand. Share, cake, don't understand. So I just explained that for the listeners.
Sure. No, that's helpful. The only reason I say that is because I literally just moved all of it and it got to the point where I just like shoving it in trash bags and be like, okay, this is fine. This is great. I need all of this. And I also just had cake for breakfast at 4 a.m. So
did you? Rock on. That's all right. I know a few people. There's an artist called Ian Berry who's a denim artist. No, sorry, an artist who uses denim. Salient point. Who has a wardrobe for his materials because it's the only way that, because it's all blues and it has to be shades of blues, like he's quite at peace with just having it all over the floor. So if that gives you permission, for better or worse, you can go ahead and do that. That would be
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, on my bookshelf right now is a fabric shelf, and then my dresser, I'm like, I guess I only need the top two drawers of my dresser and the rest I can put fabric in. I don't know.
Some people have set up a craft shop in the end just as a way of legitimizing the amount of stuff that they have. That can also happen. Yeah. The other thing that's interesting is, I was talking to Harriet Riddle. She's a machine embroidery artist. And the thing is she's fantastic at drawing free machine portraits of people. It's kind of her thing. But when you're doing that, you're moving the paper and the pen stays still. Whereas when you're doing hand embroidery, you're moving the pen and the fabric stays still. And that's an interesting contrast. Mm-hmm. Probably why it's quite refreshing to do a bit of both along the way.
Totally, yeah. And hand embroidery is quiet too. Sometimes like this, my juki, it's so loud sometimes. And so it's nice just to have quiet time.
Yeah. And very portable and stuff. You won't have it the same as me, but it's a good way if you're ever going on a train and you need a bit of space. Sometimes it's good, particularly it's a good way to be a man doing some needlework and then nobody wants to sit near you, which is a great way to.
Oh, totally. Totally. I used to live in New York. It would absolutely keep some sort of something on me like that for that reason.
So you're working on this collaborative big project at the moment. And how many other concurrent cards have you got on the go? Have you got a few?
Just this one right now. I'm working on Justice and Yeah, I started it at the beginning of the summer. Life intervened. I moved it, which was something I was so nervous about, because at the stage where it's at right now, I just cut pieces to the approximate shape and then pin them down, and they get resized and like sized down and all sorts of reconfigured, but I'd never had like moved one at this state, but I was very happy that all the pins stayed in. But right now it's just Justice that I'm working on.
And do you, like, as is the way with a lot of people, if you're working on a particular thing, a portrait of a person or a particular phrase or something, you spend a lot of time sitting in that space and reflecting on the subject matter. Does that happen to you when you're doing these cards?
Oh, totally. Yeah. So that the same idea of like getting in something that's so intricate that my mind turns off, it might be that my mind like just kind of reflects on the meaning of the card. I like, you know, with this one book I have, I'll absolutely like read and reread the section about it. But then also in the other books I have, I'll reference it, you know, and think about the micro and the macro. The world could use a little bit more justice right now. And then also thinking about how the micro of my own life and what I'm kind of looking for, or looking for it to like, to help me make meaning of in my own life too.
And then the length of time it takes to make these work, is that where something like the side projects and the bits of poetry and stuff that maintains the sort of flow, stopping you getting too like clogged up on the same big project kind of thing? Do you know what I mean? Like, so like, because you seem like someone who's very, you're quite intuitive, you kind of, you are quite creative, you do a lot, you know, even if it's through the teaching and stuff, you've got a lot of creativity happening. I feel like when you've got a piece of work that's going to take you a few months to do, there's a risk of ennui. There's a risk of just getting a bit stuck in that thing. And it feels like you have these other little shoots as like steam pressure valves or something.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's a constant cycle through. There's never just like one thing that I'm working on that my brain wouldn't be okay with that.
Mm.
I'm working on this other piece that's like, I don't even remember what card this is from, but it's, I took this imagery of like snakes wrapped around a little face, I think. And then I took, this is where I was thinking of like other people's poetry entering the frame. Like I took a line from a Louise Glick poem that I really love and kind of am getting in practice on my embroidery machine and like working that around. So like I always have, yeah, pressure valve for sure. Just like something else that I can turn to. Cause this, the part where I am with Justice, with making the shapes, is the part where I can get the most keyed up, I think, because it's just like, you have to make sure, because I'm working from the bottom up with the Justice card and putting the person together. And then I'll be like, oh shit, I have no room for their head. Like I have to take it all down. But once those pieces are locked in, then I can kind of fly be free and just start making the lines, which is a bit easier. So it's nice to have, yeah, other things to turn to.
I mean, I definitely am not talking down to you at this point, but whenever I teach people about cross stitch, I always say you start in the middle and work your way up to the sides. Therefore, you don't run out of space at the top. But just putting that out there, it might not work in your perspective.
Yeah, no, maybe next card I'll try it.
It's like I always say, like when you're at school and you write like my amazing summer holiday, and it had to be really teeny at the end. I've seen my own kids do that lately.
Totally, I've done that for sure. Yeah.
I like the fact you do that. Also then, somewhere in one of your pieces, I saw a little bit of Busta Rhymes lyrics, which I thought was A, brilliant, and then B, nicely off topic, kind of.
Totally, yeah. I went to see him last summer with Missy Elliott, and I made a back patch for one of my flannel shirts. Yeah.
Flip mode.
Flip mode squad, yeah.
Because I saw it and then I was like, hang on, flip my flip. Ah, and then I probably read your thing. I was like, I've got time for Busta Rhymes, it has to be said.
I was just going to say, in public when I've been wearing it, besides at that concert, I don't think anyone saw it there because it's dark, but I've had two people under, they're like, oh, Busta Rhymes. And I was like, yes. I went to see Ringo last summer, two summers ago, and I made a shirt. I embroidered a shirt based on one of his more memeable YouTube videos about not accepting any more fan mail. And I wore it last week for the first time in a long time. And two people, one at the movies, one at the grocery store, recognized it. And it's the most niche embroidered shirt I've ever. Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah.
This is the way strands happen sometimes, isn't it? You've been doing a bunch of kneecap stuff, haven't you? You've just been all over the place.
Yes. That was my niche for a hot minute too on TikTok. all these kids from Ireland were reaching out, and I like sold some stuff that I embroidered with a kneecap.
Do you use TikTok?
It uses me. But no, I don't use it. Besides for the kneecap, I made like a kneecap clada kind of iconography or something. I don't know what you call it. But that kind of hit there, and that's all I ever did, really.
I thought about it. I had a really good conversation with someone called Matthew Boudreau, MX Domestic, and they were talking about how it's been great for them in terms of their quilting and just using TikTok as a platform for having good conversations. They're non-binary, and so it was, you know, in that kind of arena as well. And so I was like, yeah, maybe the grown-ups do need, not grown-up, but maybe I should look into TikTok. And then 6 hours later of watching people having pimples extracted, I was just like, yeah, I don't think this is good. I don't think this is right for
me. It'll set you on the path it wants you to be on.
It's remarkable, isn't it? And someone else, I heard someone said that, like, for the last 10 years, the brightest minds on the planet have been paid to make algorithms that we can't win against. So there's no point trying to fight them. You just got to turn them off. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I need a TikTok strategy. You'll be fine. I'm going to segue then. I'm going to use Busta Rhymes as an opportunity to segue into my tricky, specific questions about things. Because do you have a favorite band / a favorite album? Is it Busta Rhymes? Probably not.
No, it's not Busta Rhymes. Last summer, it might have been a different answer. My all-time, I'm a huge Beatles nerd. That's my, like, Achilles heel. So I'd be lying if I said it wasn't the Beatles. So it's the Beatles. That's like my all-time. And my favorite Beatles album is the Live at the BBC. Like, the first one is my favorite. It hit at a particular time in my life when I was like 12 or 13. And so I just have it all like ingrained in my brain. And yeah, I like it when they do the covers too, like early stuff.
And I've seen, weren't you trying to do a Beatles, are you trying to put Beatles into a tarot image or something? You were noodling around with that, weren't you?
Yeah. I did a Fool illustration of the Fool with like Paul, like the Fool on the Hill with Martha behind him instead of the little dog. Yeah.
She's still twisting my melon. I think I've said this before on the podcast. We went to the Liverpool and went to the Beatles Museum and did all that sort of stuff. And it just blows my mind that pretty much 8 years was the entirety of it. The whole Beatles in under a decade, isn't it?
It's wild. I think too, when I turned 40 and I was like, wow. And then I turned 41, I'm like, wow, I'm older than John Lennon ever was. And just like all the time stuff is like,
But there's a band I like called The Avalanches, and they put 14 years between their first and second albums. You're like, that's like nearly two Beatles. What are you playing at, you know?
That's wild, yeah.
Work harder. Wow. That's a good challenge. Especially, I've got time for the Beatles. I think, did you watch Get Back? Have you watched all of that?
Did I? A couple times, yeah.
So cool. They were so cool then, weren't they? It's annoying.
It is annoying. And how they change. Like, sometimes I find on the internet they'll have a grid of each of them for each of the years that they were in the Beatles. And like, they just change so much from year to year. Like there's different kinds of cool that they are.
Yeah. Very good. That's a perfectly acceptable answer. Correct. Beatles. Next, favorite film.
Again, I could come up with a cooler answer, but I'm going to be real and say my favorite movie is Home Alone.
That's reasonable. Yeah. This is what gets me. I've had a couple of people that have done this now. They've gone, this is the answer I ought to give. You know, when you've got like a bookshelf, these are the books I want you to think I've read.
Sure.
But I like that. Tell me about Home Alone. Tell me what it is.
My birthday is a few days before Christmas. This movie came out when I was, I don't know, in elementary school when I was young. And like, there's something about it that's so perfect to my brain, and the way that everything in the house is red and green, and you can like watch it and not even realize that for like a decade, and then you realize it, and I don't know, and like John Candy, and it's just I actually don't even really like the bits where he's like fighting the bad guys. Like, that's some of my least favorite moments of it, but there's just something very perfect. And I think there was something to it when I was a kid too, watching it and being like, oh, like I could live on my own if I wanted to. See, like, you can just go to the grocery store, you just get your frozen mac and cheese, like you'll be fine. There's something about it. The music is great.
I saw that Macaulay Culkin was on Hot Ones 2 weeks ago. You ever watch Hot Ones?
Oh, I do sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, he's just been on it. I haven't watched it yet, but I mean, there's a trip. Grown up Macaulay Culkin and all that.
Yeah, that's weird. He should never have grown up.
How do you feel about Kieran Culkin?
No feelings.
Just none. Succession. Yeah, whatever.
Really. Oh, I never watched it. I don't know.
You not?
Too stressful.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, my whole family watched it and liked it, and the family chat was going off about it, but I just, yeah.
It's
not my thing.
Okay. Don't need the anxiety.
Yeah. It's like a family and they're fighting about money or something, right? That's all I can
pretty much,
know
about yeah.
It.
Yeah. Rich
guys. Yeah.
Something exactly. We can all really equate to, he says.
Yeah, it's too relatable.
it's too much like my own life. Very much. favorite book?
I was thinking about this, right? Because especially as a writer and an English teacher, I'm supposed to have.
I might do favorite. Yeah, I'm supposed to have. A minute as well.
Oh shit! I think I was thinking about this. I think for favorite book, I'm gonna go with Tar Beach by Faith Ringgold. That was like a really important book to me as a little kid. It's a picture book. But okay. Faith Ringgold is a beautiful quilter. She just died within the past couple of years, but she had this one quilt, Tar Beach, that was like this big story quilt. I think she painted on the fabric too, as part of how she made her quilts. But Scholastic or whatever kind of publisher for kids made it into a picture book. And it's about this young girl growing up in New York and sleeping on the roof. The roof was the Tar Beach when it's hot outside, and falling asleep on the mattress on top of the roof while the grown-ups played cards or dominoes or something over at a table, and just like about dreaming about flying over, I think it's the Manhattan Bridge that her like dad works on to help build. And so it was just like this really beautiful book, and it's also from a quilt, so I think that's kind of cool. That was something I was really into when I was little, was that book. So I like thinking about how it kind of entered my little creative mind.
Yeah, probably sort of stuck there, and then upon reflection has had more impact than you realize.
Yeah, totally.
It's quite, it sort of reminds me, it's not quite the same, but have you, A Snowy Day, and I've blanked on the name of the guy that did that, but that was like a kid's storybook about a snowy day, but it was in New York, and so it was really like, the kid was like Black American, African American, and then it was like just a really urban version of that story for a change or whatever. It's
I remember that one too. Yeah, and I think I eventually did most of my undergrad college and lived in New York, so I think that the idea of like New York entered my mind that way too, through those representations. Yeah.
Is there for like a favorite poet? Is that too big an ask? Can you give me like, have you got a Mount Rushmore of poets?
Sure. I think my favorite one, and the one I'm like going against kind of the thing I was saying at the onset, but I love Sylvia Plath. Mm-hmm. She's one of my favorites. I grew up in Massachusetts, and so did she. So I was like, wow, maybe I'm just like her, but then I'm also grateful to not be just like her. But I like her poetry, and I like her lore, and I love how there's just so much. There's like never ending things to read between her journals and her letters. And I like being able to see how the letters influence the poetry, and like just all the inner workings. And there's a lot of that with her.
Is she one of those people, and this is a naive question, I'm just going to say that now, but do you think she's one of those people, maybe a bit like Kurt Cobain, where if she was still around now, it might not be the same? Like, she'd either be awesome, but like part of her is her finitude was just there.
That's a great question. I don't know. I feel like she would definitely be on social media.
You just wonder, like with Kurt Cobain, you know, whether he'd still be like the same. I mean, maybe he would, no one knows or whatever, but you think sometimes James Dean, you know what I mean, there are some people who part of their thing is that's them, they're immortalized in that instance,
they're frozen in time. I don't know.
It's heavy, man. It's heavy.
It's heavy.
do you listen to music and stuff when you're working, if you can get past the jukey machine?
Yeah, for sure. I listen on my noise canceling headphones. It cuts through, or it doesn't cut through. But
Is it just Beatles, or is it kind of just anything goes?
Oh, it's a lot of, it's been a lot of kneecap lately. It's been a lot of get down services. It's a band I'm really into. I listen to a lot of Blind Boy too. That's not music, but it is something that comes through my headphones.
Literally came up in the last conversation I had as well.
Oh, really? Yeah. I love it so much. It like really like scratches an itch for me. Just the like tangents he goes on is really nice. It's another way of like unhitching your brain, because you have to like stay with him, otherwise you'll lose it. Yeah, and then a lot of mixes. My partner makes me a lot of really wonderful mixes that like gets me into new music, because if I'm left to my own devices, it will be just like the Beatles and the Clash kind of over and over again. So it's nice to like check in with the world.
Do you have any favorite podcasts? I mean, Needle Exchange, obviously.
Your podcast and Blind Boy. That's kind of
the alpha and the omega, some people say.
Yeah, exactly. The two. What else do you need?
nothing. That's cool. Is there a fact that not a lot of people know about Leslie Wheeler?
Well, I've been a vegetarian since 1997 or 98. Yeah.
How come?
Linda McCartney. It's all got to be connected. When Linda McCartney died.
Yeah.
I dedicated myself to vegetarianism.
Okay.
in tribute. I was like 13 or 14. Also, it kind of creeped me out. I remember having the moment where my mom was making lamb or something, and I was like, lamb. And then I had like the mental picture of like a cute little fluffy creature in a field. And I was like, oh no, like I can't do that.
Mm. My 8-year-old daughter, Flora, who doesn't listen to the podcast, but she's vegetarian apart from in the holidays. So when it's the sun, yeah, at first she was going to do, I'm going to be vegetarian apart from 7 days, my birthday, your birthday, my sister's birthday, mum's birthday, Easter day, Christmas day, and Halloween. We were like, Halloween? Not vegetarian on Halloween. So she's largely 50% of our household are vegetarian, and me and my youngest aren't. But what's your favorite like veggie meal to make? I mean,
my like go-to, my staple is quinoa, kale, tofu, and then like a big glob of veganese, and then either sauerkraut or kimchi, depending on what's in the fridge. It's my utilitarian vegetarian meal.
That does sound pretty like gut friendly as well.
Yeah, totally. It's a good school lunch for me too. Not fancy, but delicious.
No, but that's what you need, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? If you get fancy, if you get hung, I was a vegetarian for like 18 months, I think. You just end up having cheese sandwiches if you're not careful. You need something like that.
Otherwise, totally. Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Leslie, thanks for having a needle exchange.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes, subject to driver availability. More terms apply.